buckle up and settle in for a full hour of automotive mayhem with the real car guy, master technician, Mark Salem, where the only two things we can't fix is a broken heart and the crack of dawn. To talk to Mark, call 602-508-0960. That's 602-508-0960. Now, once again, here's Mark.
Rolled out to my Chevrolet. I climbed down up inside. I pulled the choke and I turned the key. But the old girl wouldn't start. She let out a whine so pitiful it nearly broke my heart.
Well, good morning, everybody. 4 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. For the next 2 hours, we're going to have nothing but fun and frivolity. Don't ask me to spell it. I can't even pronounce it. I have to spell it. And we're going to talk about cars. And if you'd like to join us, the easy part is just simply grab the phone right now and give us a call at 602-508-0960 because it kind of gets busier as the show goes on. Where our lines are wide open. Jeremy is running the ship from that end of the studio, and he'll be the one that will say to you simply, what's your name? And if you would tell us the year, make, and model of your car and give us the symptoms, then we'll do the best we can. Now, see, this exchange works like this. You tell us year, make, and model. I have a 2003... Chevrolet Impala with a V6, and it has 157,000 miles on it, and here's what it does. Then we're going to ask you questions, and between that give and take, we're going to be able to help you out and guide you and do the best we can. It costs you nothing. And Jeff Inman from Inman & Sons on 7th Street in Maryland is sitting next to me, and Jeff is as ornery as I was a couple of years ago. Would your dad agree with that?
Absolutely.
Yep. So Inman & Sons has been around since Moses' time, I think, isn't it?
Well, again, to some of the new listeners or haven't heard me before, but yeah, my grandfather was with Standard Oil Company on 7th Street since, I think, about 1941, 42 era. So my family's technically been on 7th Street since then, yep. In different locations spotted on 7th Street, but that's where we've been.
Well, it's your grandpa, and then it's your dad.
Then my dad.
And then you. And of course, your dad and I have had, we both share something. What do we both share?
Sons that work for the company or the family.
And we've had fun with that.
And we've had a blast.
Oh, we've had fun with that. And we both have places up north. We both ride motorcycles. We're both car guys.
Yes.
And we both had pretty fast boats, hot rods, and Corvettes, and all that kind of stuff. In the back shop here, we have a customer of ours that brought, I think it's a 2007, maybe Z06, with 17,000 miles on it. Black, 5-speed, 6-speed, twin turbo.
Oh, jeez.
Twin turbo.
What is it, about 700 horse, 600 horse?
It's every bit of that. We didn't have enough power in our dyno to dyno this thing.
Really?
So we were going to try to load it up in second gear, and we could finally load it in fourth.
Jeez.
And this is a thousand pounds of torque dyno. So we couldn't even get a horsepower reading because we could always overcome the tires on the dyno. So he's gonna sell it. I think he's gonna start at 50,000. I think that's a pretty good deal. But 17,000 miles, black on black, 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 and twin turboed. So, and a Z06. So how can you go bad for that? All righty. Jeff, industry standards. Industry standards are those rules and recommendations that are shared by everybody in the industry. They're not really mandated, but they are what people do right in automotive repair business. They certainly, I speak for Chevy, Ford, Chrysler, I speak for Honda, Toyota. We all have the same philosophy, and I'm gonna give you my fork real quick. So the question to you, Jeff, is what industry standard are you seeing broken right now? Industry standard says that when the customer comes in the front door, you are supposed to spend enough time either there or in the car driving to determine exactly what the customer wants. That's number one. Number two, we are supposed to then diagnose the problem, bid the problem, and provide an estimate to the customer. That's number two. Number three, we're supposed to do the repair. And then number four, we're supposed to drive the car to ensure that the symptom we went in to fix is gone. Now, you've probably seen right now, especially now because of the hard times, the economy and stuff, and it's actually worse now than it was before, because back then everybody had their credit line, but now everybody's credit line's maxed out and they're just doing what they have to do to survive. So give me an example of something that you've seen lately that doesn't spell good for our industry.
What I see in it's just like you said, in more cases than
Caller
most,
Curtis.
Is that shops, whether they be dealerships or whether they be independents,
or chains,
aren't addressing the customer's concern right from the get-go.
Yep.
So a customer comes in with whatever concern they may have, whether it be a check engine light, whether it be brake squeaking or something, and not addressing that first and foremost. It's kind of like, just let's just get it in here, and here's what we're going to charge to check all this out. Here's our fee up front just to look at something. Mm-hmm. And I don't see the fee of just to look for something.
Oh,
there's a true diagnosis being involved. That's one thing. If you're, you know, it's silly to say, but I have customers come in and they'll check engine lights on. But let me just see what it is real quick. Let me pull the code, because you got your AutoZones, you got your O'Reilly's. They're pulling codes for free.
Right.
Pulling codes, I can do that for free also. That's not diagnosing. That's simply saying, here's your code.
Right.
So in some cases, I've had small EVAP leak.
Yeah.
Very first thing I do, go around, see if the gas cap's either on there, loose, or anything.
Right.
Do that. I clear it, and I no charge.
Okay.
And they'll say to me, well, that's great. I say, if the light comes back on for the same thing, then there'll be a diagnosis fee, whether it's $100, $150, to do a smoke test on that EVAP system. To go there.
I understand.
And I think some shops are just blatantly just, they're so hungry to just try and get that diag, but they're not seeing the whole picture.
Okay, I think you hit the nail on the head at the beginning. I came in with symptom A, but you recognize that the reward on symptom A is not nearly as much as if I start ripping your car apart and listing all the brakes and the belts and the tires and the this and the that that you need. So I'm looking at, I don't want to go in this direction, which is your direction, Mr. Customer. I want to go in my direction where I make a lot more money. There's one shop down the street from you that's charging, this is what I understand, I've seen a couple of documents that suggest $200 worth of diagnosis, okay? So here's the deal. You come in, and we're going to charge you $200 for diagnosis. We're going to let you take the $200 in a credit for the repair. Now, I don't know about you, but that just wads up my underwear somewhere fierce.
Now, I'm a little bit the opposite. Okay. I'll have customers call me, or I have their vehicle in there, and I'll say it's going to be $115 diagnosis, which is our diagnosis fee on either electrical or check engine light, things like that. $115. I'll have the question, well, if I need repairs, will that go towards that repairs? It depends on what that repair is. If through my diagnosis I see a broken EVAP hose or a little bit of a leaky fuel hose, yes, it's included in that. But if I diagnose and now you need a catalytic converter or you need an oxygen sensor or you need a PCM, then no. That diag is that diag. And the way I explain it to my customers is, imagine if my technician was spending 10 hours a day just diagnosing, but nobody wanted to do the work. He'd work for free in the shop. So there's that portion.
All right. I agree with you. But the idea of $200, look at it from the customer's point of view. The customer goes in, and if the customer, what they're doing is they're charging you $200 to go on a shopping spree on your car. Then they're saying to you, we're going to give you a $200 credit if you buy something. But if you don't buy something, you spent $200 that maybe you didn't really want to know. Maybe you didn't really have the money to spend. Maybe you really didn't want that shopping spree on your car. And besides that, when you give me a $200 credit, well, if your diagnostic fee is $200 and you're going to give me a $200 credit, so what?
Yeah, exactly.
I still have all these other – so no, you're right. The diagnostic fee, you hear me a lot on the radio. The diagnostic fee pretty much city-wise is between $75 and $150. Okay?
Correct.
If it's really easy, they'll drop below $75. If it's really more expensive, but here's what I got for you. Guy takes his car into a transmission shop. This is what he says. I'm driving down the road on the highway, and all of a sudden, my car, it's like somebody locks the brakes up. The back tires are throwing blue smoke. I'm up against my seatbelt. I'm headed towards the dash. Then when all hell breaks loose, he says, then I pull off the side of the road, and now I'm driving down the road at 20 miles an hour, and it's $3,000. Okay? You with me?
I'm with you.
I say to him, those are really unusual, and as we talk, that's later. He goes into the first shop, and the guy goes, needs a transmission. 3,800 bucks, and you got to pay first. Bad sign. Okay, he goes back in five times, and he still has the same symptoms. He takes it to shop B. This is a true story. Shop B replaces the transmission for 3,800, and he still has exactly the same.
So he's
symptoms.
Out 76
so far, and so then he ends up finding somebody who diagnoses it as an external wire harness, and the external wire harness is replaced. And the problem is solved. So it had nothing to do with transmission 1 or 2. Here's what was going on. Think about this. He's driving down the road, 60, 50, 60 miles an hour. Always happens on the highway. And all of a sudden, the rear wheels lock up. He gets thrown forward like somebody hit him in the tail end. And then he pulls off the side of the road. He gathers himself. And now he's going down the freeway. And the motor is screaming. And it's in first gear. It's because it went into first gear when he was doing 60 miles an hour. The wire harness was such in bad shape that the wires were touching another, and it was throwing it into first gear at 60 and 70 miles an hour. That's why the rear wheels were locking up.
Yeah.
It was throwing. So he's suing everybody now, and it's an unbelievable thing. All somebody had to do was sit down and talk with this guy and go for a ride. And here's the kicker. Both shop one and shop two, he went out and demonstrated it to them.
Wow.
He demonstrated what he knew would happen, but he didn't understand that it was going into first gear. You know, Chrysler vans do that. You drive down the road, the speed sensor drops out. All of a sudden, the automatic transmission shifts to first gear, and you're in for a heck of a ride. 602-508-0960. Curtis, real quick here. We're going to start with you, buddy. How can we help you today?
Well, hi, Mark. It's not a mechanical problem. I have a 2002 Olds Aurora.
Okay.
With about 100,000 miles on it.
Okay.
And when it rains, this last big rainfall we had, water comes in on the front door, trickles down to the back seat on the floorboard, and fills up with an inch of water.
Okay.
And I looked at the rubber seals, and they look like they're almost all brand new, no rips, no tears.
Okay. We have a device. Body shops have a device where they set this transmitter on the front seat. Then they have a handheld receiver, and they get outside. The handheld receiver looks like an eraser on a blackboard. And they rub it all around the door and around the windshield, and they'll find where your leak is at. It could be the windshield. It could easily be one corner of the windshield is leaking water. It's running down the left kick panel. It fills up the driver's side, overflows into the back seat. It could be that. Have you got a sunroof or a moonroof?
No.
Okay. Any good body shop will be able to find that for you. I got to take a break. So hold your thought and stay right there, Curtis. Anybody else? 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. And Jeff has a comment, Curtis, so you stay right there. We'll be right back right after this. Welcome back, everybody. 602-508-0960. Matt, Tim, and Mike, you're up next. We're going to finish up with Curtis, but before we do that, we're going to talk about quality transmission. Folks, all of my shops, and I think there's 40 or 50 of them, make me as proud as any papa can be, and I'm not their dad. But these guys really do a good job. And quality transmission and my other transmission, they're all the best you can hope for. There isn't a week that goes by that I don't get a call from a happy customer from Quality Transmission in Tempe. They tell me about how knowledgeable Bob and his staff are, how much money they saved, how happy they are. And it always goes, diagnosis, repair, test drive, successful. That's what they tell me. In addition to repairing transmissions, they do clutches, drive lines, drive axles, CV boots, CV axles, replacements. Quality Transmission is located in Tempe, McClintock, just north of University. Jeff, finish up with Curtis. He's got that water leak in his car.
Those seals on the door might look like they're okay, but make sure that the door is actually have a good seal against the seal. So there might be a gap between the seal and the door that door might not be in alignment or might be stretched out, not stretched out a little bit, but you know what I'm saying,
right,
where it's just been opened and closed so many times to make sure you're getting a good tight fit in there.
You know, I saw an old body shop guy. You know what he did? He took a piece of paper, and he started it on the driver's door. He started at 12 o'clock. And he'd shut the door on the piece of paper, and he'd pull the paper out. Then he'd move it to the right. He went all the way around the door, and he could quickly determine
great idea
which one, where the doggone gap was. Thank you, Curtis, buddy. Matt, you're up next.
Thank
Matt, how you doing?
Hey, I've got a 1993 3/4-ton Chevy truck. It's a 3.7, and it's not passing the emission. And I don't know if that's something that I changed the cap, I changed the plug.
No. Hey, Matt, just tell us what you failed. That's going to tell us what direction.
Okay, so my hydrocarbon, so like a 4.9 of my COs is like a 33. The NOx, I pass.
Okay, 33. I want to start at the 33. What's the standard for the CO?
Shoot, I only wrote down what I failed. I didn't get the...
Okay.
But do you have that sheet, Matt?
Yeah, let me...
Okay, let me talk about it while you're looking, okay? I think that in your case, we're going to start with the CO because the 33 tells us that the CO is causing the high HC.
Uh-huh.
So if it's 33 point something, then you're pouring lots of fuel down the throat of that engine. So,
right.
And so forget the HC because once we get the CO under control and we drop the CO, then the HC is going to follow it. Now, you're running rich. Mass airflow sensor, coolant sensor, MAP sensor, throttle position sensor, fuel pressure regulator. Give me anything else.
Could it be a cap?
Well, it could be, but your numbers are going to vary, and somebody can test your CAD at a shop. We're going to take its temperature for the one of the first things we're going to do, but we're also going to look at the before and after O2 sensors, but I don't think your 93's got a before one, so we'd probably go upstream. What we want to do is we want to make sure there's fuel going into the cat, but out the backside there's no fuel, and that's mm-hmm. what we want to check it for. So sometimes we drill holes in front and in back of the cat. We take our sniffers, and we sniff the front, sniff the back, and if the CO coming into the cat is 30 and it's going out at 30, then the cat's not lit. Let me ask you this. How many times do you take it out on the freeway? Does that happen every day or only once a month?
Like once a month, maybe.
Okay, this is what I do. How many tests have you gone? One or two or three?
I'm on four.
Okay, good.
Well, so this one's another free one.
Yeah, this one's another free one. Thank you, Jeff. You're right. This is what I would do. Have you ever gone on a 10-mile jaunt on the freeway and then duck in for a test?
No.
All right. We need to see if the catalytic converter
gets lit. Smoking hot.
Yep. I'm with Jeff. When you're in line, first of all, take it out on the freeway and just run it in third gear, kick the overdrive off, bring those RPMs up on that 5.7 liter, uh-huh. and run those RPMs up high and just up and down the freeway, maybe up 5 miles, back 5 miles, and duck in. While you're in line, put it in neutral and hold the RPMs up to
2,000.
Yep. Keep that cat warm. Then go in. Then your test will make sense. Now, okay. If you go to marksalem.com and look at the FAQs, one of them talks about vehicle emissions. It tells you exactly what system to work on based on your readings. But if you failed CO, forget HC. I'm not going to worry about HC or NOx. I'm going to get the CO under control, and then I'm pretty sure the other two will fall in because the CO is the real culprit.
Yeah.
All righty?
It says I'm supposed to be at 25.
Okay.
Well, he's not off by...
No, but not he's 25 point or 25 point something, and he's at 33. Yeah, that's kind of high.
The other question I have is when I hit about 1,200 RPMs, it starts to chug pretty good.
Okay.
Would that be all these sensors that you're thinking of?
Well, it's running rich. We know it's running rich. And if it's chugging, maybe the reason why it's chugging is because we fouled all the spark plugs on it or we've got problems in the ignition system, the cap, the rotor, the pickup, the module.
Yeah, those are all brand new.
Okay, did you replace the distributor in its entirety and it came with the pickup and the module?
Probably about a year and a half ago.
Okay. Well, whenever it's chugging, you have to determine spark or fuel. Mm-hmm. And so you have to go out and drive it, and you have to add propane to it and see if the propane helps it or makes it worse, because if it helps it, you're running lean, but your emissions test says we're running rich, so there's... You know, it's kind of one of those things that you just got to get in there and get your finger. Now, let me give you the good news. Jeff, he brings it into your shop, and basically he says to you, I want you to diagnose my repair for my emissions and emissions only. Give me the range for the diagnostic fees.
It's anywhere between 100, 100 and a quarter.
And I would say the industry is going to be between 75 and 150, and I would think that everybody's going to start under 100, and you're likely to be just a tad over 100. You've already spent three times that much money guessing.
Yeah.
Okay, so that my best advice to you is just get some, and it's okay if you go in and say, I want to fix it, but I want you to diagnose it. That's okay.
Gotcha.
All right, thanks, buddy.
Thank you, Tim.
All right, you, Tim, you're up next. Tim, how are you today?
Thanks for taking my call. I love your show.
Thank you.
Listen, I got an 01 Silhouette minivan. It's an Oldsmobile.
Uh-huh.
You know those cabin filters they got in the glove box?
Yep.
Well, first of all, they're not hard to get out, but if you're a bear to get in, I couldn't even get the new ones in. Do you have to have those things in a car?
No. Well, I would say you don't have to,
uh-huh.
but you're going to get debris and you're going to get all of that, all the, if you got the old one out and you saw how dirty that thing was,
yeah,
all that's just going to be sitting there in your dashboard area,
yeah,
with nowhere to go other than get built up in there. And sooner or later, you're going to have to get out the vacuum cleaner and vacuum it all out. So that filter does trap all those impurities and leaves and debris and
It's going to dirt. The evaporator case underneath the dash is like
I never open the outside vents. I just recirculate all the time.
Yeah, but you're recirculating all the fuzz on your wife's feet.
Okay. You're right.
And I don't know about you, but everybody I know, every cowboy I know, uses the passenger side floorboard as a trash can.
Yeah, you're right.
Okay, so what's happening when you have internal recirculation and you're recycling,
uh-huh,
the radiator inside that case called, uh-huh, the evaporator core, it's going to get plugged with trash.
Oh,
and then the airflow is going to be substantial, and so you're going to have it on high, but it's going to be blowing like a whisper.
Yeah.
Now, keep in mind, though, I'm going to take the other side of this coin, Jeff.
Yeah.
We never had cabin filters for 100 years ago.
Correct. Right.
And rarely did we have to go in underneath the dash and clean that area up. So to answer your question, why don't you just go to your shop and walk inside,
uh-huh,
and say to them, you know, guys, I love you guys, and I tried to do something myself, and I'm having a tough time. Jeff, I'm standing in front of you. I'm having a tough time getting this filter in. Could you please help me? How much is that going to cost?
Yeah. Well, maybe when I get the brakes put on, I'll put them in anyway.
There you go. A lot of times they probably do it for nothing.
Yeah.
I mean, it's some of those simple ones where you look on the computer and they call little. There's a lot of places that'll just...
I know, but he said he's already got it out, so all you got to do is slide it in and shut it. So that's what I'm thinking. Okay, when we come back, Mike, you'll be next. Anybody else? 602-508-0960. The lines are open. Mike's the only one on right now. So if you want to call in with your car question, again, 602-508-0960. 508-0960. Welcome back, everybody. My name's Mark Salem, Jeff Inman. He's the top dog of Inman & Sons, 7th Street in Maryland. Him, his dad, Ron, and his grandfather have been in or near that intersection for 50 years. For 50 years or
more. Pretty close.
Yeah.
Pretty close.
So if you live in that area, trust me when I tell you that Jeff will take really, really good care of you. He's a third generation Inman, and that's what it's all about. Okay, Mike, you're up next, buddy. How can I help you?
Hey, Mark and Jeff. Thanks for entertaining and educating me.
Okay.
94 half-ton, 4x4. Bought it new in 94. Gave it to my daughter in 2002. It spent the last 2 years in Flagon, Oregon. Lots of abuse. I've got it back now.
Okay.
Lots of little things wrong with it, but the most annoying thing now is the door locks, power door locks. They'll move, but they won't lock.
Okay.
Are they just gummed up, or is there a part?
Yeah, they can't. Yeah, we've seen that. You know.
Is this a Ford?
No, Chevy. Chevy had to.
Are you sure it's not a Ford?
You know what, Mark? You see so much. You know, these cars get washed so many times,
yeah,
and they maybe spill a Coke or a coffee, and somebody put their left arm up on the seal, and it's just it could be gummed up easily.
Yeah, you can take the door panel off, okay? And there's an electric solenoid cord called a door lock activator, and it's going to be mounted on the door somewhere. It's this little solenoid looking thing with two wires. And actually, when you push the button, the solenoid is either going to push the lever up or push it down. You disconnect it from the solenoid, grab it with your hand, and you lift it up and lift it down. If it's really hard to lift it up and lift it down, pull the door, and you probably got more than one, so go to the other door panel and strip it off too. So compare the solenoid disconnected, compare the activation of that arm on both solenoids. If one of them is really, really tight and the other is really, really loose, then the really tight one needs to be cleaned up and lubricated. That doesn't guarantee that's going to fix it, because really that fixes about 20% of them. The other 80% is the solenoid needs to be replaced. It's just not strong enough.
Yeah, it could be weak.
And would that be both of them or just one of them?
No, you're going to do them one at a time. And
there'll be one per door.
Yeah,
right.
But you're always going to have the other door to look at. So if you get screwed up and you don't know where this bolt came from, you can always pull the door panel on the other side and find out. That's the beauty of door panels, is you never get lost.
Okay. And as I recall, in that year, when you take the door panel off, it's got those little circle things that you break and then replace.
Yep.
Yeah, those are really inexpensive. Those are just little body panel clips.
Okay.
And you're going to buy a fork at the auto parts store.
Okay.
And it's really flat, and it's a V in the middle, and you're going to stick it underneath there, and you're going to grab it and put that little plastic pin right between the fork, and then you're going to pop it out, and you won't break the door panel. And it's going to cost you $6 for that fork, door panel remover, clip removal. And then while you're there, buy a bunch of clips and you'll be home free.
Okay, and you, of course, take the hardware off first, I assume?
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. Okay. You're going to have to take door. You're going to have to take anything on the outside, and you're don't force it because there's always going to be a screw somewhere
yeah.
that you don't see.
Okay. Yeah, as you're pulling around on that, if all of a sudden the front part's still stuck, that means there's a screw or
something in there.
Something's still missing.
All righty. Good luck.
Super. Thanks.
You betcha. This portion of Under the Hood is brought to you by Larry Harker's Auto Repair. Folks, picture this. Camelback south to the 10 between the West 101 and the I-17. If you live anywhere then near that area, then Larry Harker's Auto at 38th Avenue and Indian School is where you should go if you don't already have a car repair shop. Bob, the owners, Bob and Ellen, have owned Larry Harker since 1989. Their technicians have been with them since Moses was around. They're a trusted source, quality repairs, affordable prices, honest people. They're looking out after you first. Again, 38th Avenue and Indian School, I'm proud to recommend Larry Harker's Auto Repair, 38th Avenue and Indian School. Terry, you're up next, buddy.
Yes, good morning, Mark.
Good morning.
I've got a 2006 Toyota Camry, and it's got 118,000 miles on it, and it's been the best car I've ever owned. It's got a four-cylinder, and the question I have is just a maintenance item. I want to change the transmission fluid, and my question is, do I change the filter and the fluid, or do I do a flush on it?
Jeff, you do go first.
Terry, how long has it been since you've had a transmission service?
It's never had one yet. We bought the car new, and it's got 118,000 on it, so.
I would, my recommendation would just be to do a drain and refill. I don't know what Mark would say. With nothing being done ever, I'd be cautious about draining it all out of there and flushing it.
I agree.
Getting, whether it might, may or may not disrupt.
Cause a problem,
and then you'd feel real bad about that. So I'd mix some new fluid in with the current old fluid that's in there.
Yeah, drop the pan, and replace the filter because we haven't had the filter out yet.
Yeah,
and if you'd have done this, it's okay. History, it's your wife's fault anyway. If she would have taken the car in at around 30 to 60 and done it the first time, we would have done filter and 3 or 4 quarts of fluid. The following 30, 60,000 miles, we would have done a flush. Then we do fluid filter once, flush next. The filter, again, is the filter plus 2, 3, 4 quarts of oil. When you do the flush, we don't even take the pan off. We hook up a machine to the 2 cooler lines, push 20 quarts in, push 20 quarts out, boom, we're done and you have 100% new fluid. Both of us are a little leery. There's some old wives' tales about transmission fluid causing problems, especially one at 100,000 miles. That's why we're saying let's just feed it some new fluid a little bit at a time. So let's just do the filter in 4 quarts right now. When we come back, Bob and Michael and Frank, you guys are it. We'll be back right after this. The phone number is 602-508-0960,
508-0960. Most Friday.
Welcome back, everybody. 44 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. Jeff Inman from Inman & Son, 7th Street in Maryland, is sitting next to me. He's my co-pilot, and this portion of Under the Hood is brought to you by my friend Tom, who owns Action Auto, full-service auto, Deer Valley area. He's located at I-17 in Deer Valley. Action Auto and Tom, family-owned business, prides itself on good, accurate repairs, reasonable prices, and they're going to test drive your car to make sure that they got your problem. They use factory-recommended intervals. They don't make up intervals, service intervals themselves. They use what your car says. Their technicians are ASE certified, and they get the job done right. So if you're looking for somebody with an A rating at the Better Business Bureau, Action Auto, I-17, and Deer Valley. Michael, you're up, buddy. What can we do for you?
Hi, Mark. Appreciate all your help. I also want to mention Jerry's Auto on Main that I've been using for about 10 years.
He's a good guy.
Great place. Thank you. My question's related to that. My daughter is 21-year-old, moving to California. How's a good way to find a shop out of state?
Oh, that's a great question. If you go to my site, marksalem.com, and you go to Best Car Repair Shops, scroll down on the first page, you're going to go to ASE Blue Seal Shops. Okay. Adam Sam Edward Blue Seal Shops, and you're going to put the zip code in where she's at. The Blue Seal Shops represent the top 10% of all the shops in the United States. They are, more than half of their technicians are master technicians, blah, 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 blah. Then you're going to want to check that list against the local Better Business Bureau and only deal with shops that have an A-, A-plus rating. You do not use a transmission shop that has an F. Okay? Right. That, because that guy's in big trouble. But that's what you do. And if the shop has an A rating at the Better Business Bureau and they're an ASC Blue Seal shop, trust me. Now, the other thing, too, real quick, is she goes into the auto parts store on a Sunday morning. And she says to the grizzly guy there, who's the guy that's been around the longest, who pays his bills, who keeps all the parts he orders instead of, as opposed to the guy who orders five parts and returns three because he's trying to see which one fits your car, and which one, Mr. Grizzly Guy, with hair coming out of the collar of your T-shirt, which one do you go to? And he'll know, too.
Sounds great.
All right.
Appreciate it.
Thank you, buddy. And let's go to Frank. Frank, how are you today? What can we do for you?
Thank you for taking my call. Listen, I've got an '02 Pontiac minivan, and I just got some new oil, and I was wondering if it's okay. Probably most oils are good. It's a 5W30, and it's a Chevron Supreme oil with a SN rating. Is that okay?
Absolutely.
Don't need anything better, eh?
Nope. You can go to a semi-synthetic or a full synthetic, but in reality, if that's the if you've been using a 530,
yep,
that SN, Sam Nora oil is as good as you're going to get right now.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
You betcha.
Take goodbye.
You betcha. Ron, you're up next, buddy. How can I help you?
Yeah, so I'm. Thanks, Mark. I've got a 2010 F-150 4x4
okay,
Supercruise cab, and it has 27,000 miles on it, and I've got squeaky brakes, and I've had it since, probably 10,000 miles ago, and I talked to the dealer, and they kind of shrugged their shoulders and said it was pretty typical of Ford trucks.
Did they tell you that before you bought it?
I love it when, the brake concern, and my wife, if she's listening, will say this, because, brakes should not make noise.
Right.
You don't buy new cars and you drive off the dealership lot and the brakes squeal. So my theory is when these brake people or whoever says that, that's kind of standard with this, that answer normally doesn't bode well with me. They should be quiet from the day that you got it.
And he's exactly right. This Inman kid is exactly right, in spite of the fact that I know his father, and we're not quite sure where Jeff came from. but the fact of the matter is that there's pads that are softer. Now, the soft pads will make the front wheels a little dirty. You'll see that on Mercedes-Benz. You'll never hear anybody with a Benz complain of soft or of squeaking brakes because the Mercedes-Benz pads are pretty soft and they dirty up the front wheels.
Well, and the rotors are really soft. That's why normally you got to replace them instead of resurfacing.
Exactly, and they're too thin already, so
correct,
they don't give you more than one or two hairs in order to trim them up. So the idea is you just change out when you do your next brake job. And another thing too is the pads are
vibrating. Mark, he's got 27,000 miles on that thing. If he's driving it the way I'm assuming he's driving it, he might not need brakes for a while.
Okay, but he could go in and check to see if the leading edge is beveled. We got a 45 degree on the bottom side of all four pads. You want to make sure that the hardware kit is firmly holding the pads in the caliper, and if not, you want to get that to happen. But really and truly, do you have a warranty still on this Ford?
Yes, I do.
I just, you go back and you say to him, No. You need to do something. You can change the brand of pads. You can do whatever you want.
It could be a caliper slide that's just a little bit dirty and just needs to be lubricated up, back up.
And what about this? If the inboard pad is wearing substantially more than the outboard pad, that means the piston's hanging up in the caliper. This guy looks at your squeal. He's talking to you, and he diagnoses it without even checking it out. Maybe you're missing a hardware pin. Maybe the springs are gone. Maybe these pads are chattering like crazy because you got a big lump of asphalt inside there. Somebody needs to look. Just go back and say, look, this isn't good enough. That give me the keys to your car, bucko, and let me go drive yours.
There you go.
I tell him my text. I said, don't sell a set of shocks that look better than the ones on your car, because I'm going to pull your car in. And if you got shocks in there that are leaking a little bit of oil and you try to sell this guy who has one drop, then we got a problem. So you just tell him, give me the keys to your car, buddy. All righty, Frank. Ron.
Yeah, well, thanks so much, guys.
Okay.
My neighbor even told me, he says, I leave my house early. I'm in the construction business. He says, I wake him up in the morning when I leave.
Yeah, that's loud.
I back out of the driveway, so that's how loud they are.
Yeah, another thing you might try, and this works sometimes, is some people are just soft-footed, so they're into their brakes a little early, and they're just kind of coasting up and stuff like that. That does glaze them. I mean, depending on how much stuff you got in the bed of your truck, you don't want to do any panic stops because you don't want that stuff coming through the back window. But just make a conscious effort to back off the throttle and then just kind of wait until 100 feet before uh-oh time, and just kind of clamp on the brakes kind of hard and come to an abrupt stop. And don't do that with Grandma Moses on your rear bumper. All righty.
Okay.
Thank you very much,
thanks,
buddy.
Thanks so much, guys. Thank you.
Bet.
You're welcome.
Don, you're up, buddy. How can I help you?
Good morning. Yes, I got a 99 F-250 Super Duty, and I heard you speak earlier about the guy with the Chevy with his automatic door locks won't lock.
Uh-huh.
My problem is mine won't unlock, and I was assisting, because it's a four-door, so I was assisting them by pulling up while I was trying to unlock them using the manual, or I mean the electric.
Uh-huh.
Well, now both of those in the back door have pulled off in my hand. So there's no way I can open up the doors out from the outside or inside, of course. One of Ford's light bulbs, they're going off.
Yeah.
And how do I get them open so I can get to the door panel?
Okay.
So both rear doors won't open? Is that what you said, Don?
They're locked, and he can't pull up the button.
It's like the rod's broken.
And it could be that the solenoid's just fried and locked.
I can hear them working, but they won't unlock.
Okay. Well, there's plenty of body shops that can do that for you. It's not uncommon for us to have to go in and take the back seat out and do the work from the inside in order to get out. That happens a lot. So we're all pretty well versed in the back seat of your truck. We're going to hop in the back seat. We're going to roll the windows down. We're going to pull the back seat out. Then we're going to take the door panel off, reach in there, unlock it, then open the doors, put the back seat back in, and we're done. In your particular case, I have one thing I want you to tell the shop when you go in for the repair. Tell him, I've tried the rear locks at the door and the master switch, both of them. So master switch, driver's rear, master switch, passenger rear, and nothing makes a difference, because he'll do that test. But if you tell him you've already done it, it saves you some money.
Okay.
All righty.
Thank you.
Good luck to you, buddy. And Tony, you're up next. Tony, how are you?
Hey, thank you, Mark and Jeff. I've got a 1970s Yugo. It has 300,000 miles on it, and it just, the problem with it is it just doesn't smoke the tires across the intersection like it used to.
Okay, I got an answer for you. Park it in a big pile of gasoline that you dropped on the road, light it on fire, and then you'll have all the smoke you want. Your car's just sitting in the middle of the gas. I should have said that. Park your car and then pour gas all the way around it, and then light it, and it'll smoke as much as you want.
I don't have an answer. I was born in 1970.
I'm lying to you. Okay? I don't have a Yugo or anything like that. Okay? What I really want to ask you is, look, you have this black-on-black Corvette, the Z06. Mark, how many times did you get it off the rack and run it around the block just to make sure that, these numbers just weren't coming up wrong? When you got like twin turbo and over 1,000 foot-pounds of torque, for God's sake, that's got to be about 1,000 horsepower and something like that.
Well, I actually employ a test driver. His name is Alan Salem. That's my son. His driving record is cleaner than mine.
And you must have a good life insurance policy on him, too?
And I say, son, take this out. And he comes back, and I say, when does it come on? And he says, Dad, when you hit about $4,000, he says, it'll paste you against the back of the seat. And he's driven the Cobras, and he says it has more pull than the Cobras do. And so the idea of putting a $20 bill up on the dashboard, and you throttle the Cobra to the floor, and can you reach forward and grab the $20 bill off the front part of the dash? But I helped install Dale Scheifler and Adam Strickler. Those two technicians installed this twin turbo on this car. The twin turbos are on the back of the car, and the air ducts that are pressurized travel the frame of the car inside the kick panels of the Corvette to the front.
Well, I got a sleeper one for you. I got a sleeper car that you wouldn't suspect unless you've been in one. But
okay.
I have a dear friend of mine's got an E63 Mercedes. It happens to be a 2012 or 2011.
Uh-huh.
The E63. You take the emblems on the back of this car, and I'll tell you right now, I'll put it up against just about anything. It'll set you in the seat shifting from second to third gear. Not first to second, second to third, and it's almost...
How about
one of the scariest cars I've actually been in?
Is it going to top the 550 or the brand new 600? It's not a normally aspirated car. It's a hot rod.
Correct. But this is factory. It's just all factory E63. All right. So it's an AMG car. So as we know, Mercedes-Benz, the AMG, is all hand built with the
performance.
Exactly. It's all built and put together by one technician with his signature on there. The car's just so light and has so much horsepower. That's the thing, versus the big bodies, the 550s or the 600s, the bi-turbo, they're just a much heavier car all the way around, so you got your weight-to-horsepower ratio.
Well, let me tell you a story, okay? This is what I heard. There's a guy with a blown Camaro, a brand-new blown Camaro, on his way to Las Vegas, and this 550 with a dealer plate on it pulls up next to him and gives him a little wave and takes off. Now, they've got a top speed of about 140 miles an hour, and they're big and fast. The Camaro pulls in behind the 550, and it's the stretch between Kingman and the dam. So they're all alone out there in the middle of the desert, and the Camaro's behind the Mercedes. And then all of a sudden, the Mercedes exhaust starts doing this, with the black smoke. He's up against his speed limiter, I'm told. So then the Camaro driver turns on the left turn signal, which is not what the Mercedes guys wanted to see in his rearview mirror, and he pulls out and passes the Mercedes and gives him the old wave-a-roni. And then the Camaro takes off down the road. Then you know you got him,
a minute and
according
a half.
To what they say. They you know you got him when he passes you and he won't look at you and he's doing like 65.
Oh, I'll get another one.
All right, well, I don't have time.
I know, I have to have this. This is 15 seconds.
Quick.
Bugatti Veyron being driven from Vegas back to Phoenix. Don't mention any names. Needed fuel. They put 91 octane because that's all you could find. Mm-hmm. The car shuts down halfway through, or actually about just a few miles outside because it has to have 106. The computer recognizes that, shuts down the car. So imagine your $1 million car on the side of the road as people are going by.
And especially the people with Wiki up with the tow trucks are going to come get you.
That's also a true story.
That's a big deal. All right, when we come back, the lines are wide open. 602-508-0960. Jeff, thank you for spending your Saturday with me.
Thank you for having me, as always.
Inman, 7th Street in Maryland. You can't go wrong. See Jeff, 7th Street in Maryland, southeast corner. Good guy, been around a long time, and I know his dad. So if you have any problems, you call me or you call Ron Inman, and we'll straighten Jeffrey out. He's a good son of a good dad. Okay, 602-508-0960. If you'd like to join us, you can. And when we come back, we're going to talk cars. The lines are wide open. So if you call in now, we're going to go boom, 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 and I'll get you in and out as fast as I can. Also want to remind you that my email address is mark@marksalem.com. So my website is marksalem.com. mark@marksalem.com, and when this show is on, you know we aren't pretend.
This was a paid program and was provided for informational purposes only.
Hi, I'm Joan London, and if you're worried about your
parent
about
that,
or
Mark,
a loved
that's
one
on our
living
end.
Alone, like
no,
I
thing
was,
is,
fine.
And you want
fine.
Reliable
you
senior
fine.
Care...
only.
Buckle up and settle in for a full hour of automotive mayhem with the real car guy, master technician, Mark Salem, where the only two things we can't fix is a broken heart and the crack of dawn. To talk to Mark, call 602-508-0960. That's 602-508-0960. Now, once again, here's Mark.
Welcome back, everybody. 4 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. I'm here answering your car questions for the next hour, and I would encourage you that if you have a car question or a car problem, or if you just want to ask a hypothetical question, or if you want to run an estimate by me, or if you want to talk about aftermarket warranties, if you want to talk about windshield wipers. I had an interesting email the other day asking me about windshield wipers. And real quick, I'll tell you that there are three levels of windshield wiper. There's the cheap guy, which is going to be $5, $10, $12. There's the middle-of-the-road guy that's going to start at about $15 and work its way up to $30. And then there's going to be some just last forever. But here's the problem. The rubber on a windshield wiper is supposed to lay over on each stroke. So on the upstroke, the tail of the wiper faces down. And when the wiper gets all the way to a vertical position and begins to move back down, the rubber is supposed to be pliable where the squeegee end of the rubber is supposed to flip over. The problem in Arizona is this. As you park the wipers down at the bottom of your windshield, that end of the wiper blade is curved upwards, okay? Because that's the last stroke, is downward. So when you start it up, they chatter. And because they sit there for 6 months, then the end of the rubber is now patterned into that one area. And so they're going to chatter on the way up and squeegee on the way down. So I say to him, I say to you, just buy the middle of the road. Don't buy those really expensive ones that have all kinds of secret lotions inside of them to make them polish your windshield. And don't buy the $6 ones because they aren't going to last long at all. Just buy the middle of the road. I personally install ANCO. I like the salesman, I like the company, and I like the fact that these arms and blades will certainly last a year. All right, this portion of the hood is brought to you by Quality Transmission. Not too long ago, Quality made a mistake. And they called me and they said, we made a mistake. And I said, okay. And they said, this is how we're going to take care of it. And I says, what really is important to me is what the customer says. A little while later, they called me up and they said, we've made the customer an offer. He's accepted it. And I said, well, I'm thinking this. What did you do? And he says, we did a little bit more. And I says, good. That's the kind of place they are. That's exactly the kind of place they are. If they make a mistake, they're men. They stand up, they raise their hands, and they say, I made a mistake. So that's the kind of shop that you want. Bob, he's a great guy. He's honest as the day is long, and you only need to know that Bonnie, his wife, is 10 times tougher than that Vietnam veteran. So, if Bob acts up at home, he's got bigger problems than a mad customer, trust me. Nevertheless, Bob is in Tempe. He's the only transmission shop I tell you to go to in Tempe, because he's a good guy. Now, all around the East Valley, you can come to Bob at Quality Transmission. Tempe, McClintock, just north of University. All right, we're going to go to the phones. Rob, you're up first. How are you, Rob? What can we do for you?
I'm well, thank you. Hey, Mark, 92 Lincoln Town Car, 85,000 miles. Over the last two or three months, I've noticed a fairly significant decrease in gas mileage. Made sure the tires were pumped up correctly. Air filter was changed. Additive to the gas. Any other suggestions? It's almost all freeway miles that I drive.
Okay. And other than that, it starts well. It idles. The quality of idle is good, both hot and cold. It accelerates good. There's no hiccup. There's no burping. There's no missing. There's no bucking, right?
No, she runs like a top. I bought it from an estate sale, a woman that died over in Sun City West, so I stole it for $1,900. But okay. I noticed that the gas is going through it faster.
Right. Well, this time of the year, when we have the rain and the moisture and the humidity, keep in mind that a gallon of air has a whole lot of water in it. It's not uncommon for you to lose fuel economy during the changes of seasons. And the predominant one is in the front side of winter, coming into winter, and going out of winter. Those are the two times that we see this kind of problem. Now, I'll tell you what. For under $30, you can drive that through a vehicle emissions. And they're going to say to you, you're not due. And you're going to say to them, I don't care. I'll pay for the vehicle emissions. I want to use it as a diagnostic tool. And I want you to stick the probe in the tailpipe. They'll put it on the dynamometer. They'll run it. They'll give you the readings. If you passed, then it has nothing to do with what's underneath the hood. Because what's underneath the hood tells us of the tailpipe. Now, if you've got a garage that you've been doing business with a very long time, and you take it in for an oil change, look him in the eye and say to him, I got some poor fuel economy. I think I'm interested in seeing if that fuel economy comes out of the tailpipe. Would you warm it up good after you change the oil? And would you just stick a tailpipe probe in there for just like an idle and maybe a cruise kind of test? And tell me if you see a problem? Really and truly, I got lots of customers, and there's a whole lot of them that I would do that for nothing. So just ask your shop if they can help you out.
And what would they do if, what would be the problem?
You'd have high CO. CO is unburnt fuel. So we're flooding the motor, and we're causing CO to come out, and it's going to show in the tailpipe. So CO is going to be high. HC will be higher because it causes, high CO causes high HC. So forget the HC. We always deal with CO first. And he's going to look at you and say, okay, well, this is what it says, and your weight, you're double or triple what you're supposed to have, so I need to go in there and find out which one of the computer operations on your 92 town car is causing this to run rich. Now, here's a good example. The computer wakes up in the morning, and the computer looks at the coolant sensor, and there's a bad connection at the coolant sensor. The coolant sensor's bad, and the coolant sensor says it's minus 40. Do you think that motor's going to run rich? at minus 40. You think the computer's going to turn on lots of fuel because it needs to choke the motor to get it running?
Okay.
Of course. Now, if that never changes, all through the day, the computer thinks you're in, you know, the Antarctica. So okay. It's going to be running heck heavy fuel through the motor. In that scenario that I just described to you, sooner or later, the check engine light's going to come on and say, hey, hold on. There's no way that this car can go 5 days and be at minus 40 and not be minus 48 or 32 or minus 10. It never is warming up. And then that's the key that, okay, if the thermostat's stuck wide open, it'll run cold, and then it'll run rich. So I fixed lots of Fords by saying, if you'll let me change your thermostat, which is bad, I'll fix your fuel economy because I'm going to raise the temperature of the motor. So
and those thermostat's easy.
Yeah, but don't do a guest kind of thing. Here's what you do to check the thermostat. You start it up first thing in the morning, and you open up the radiator cap before you even start it up. And you look inside there, and you hold the idle up, have the wife help you, or have one of the kids help you. You don't want to see any flow in the radiator. You want to see the water ripple, but not move. You want to reach up and grab the upper hose and squeeze it. The upper hose should be cold. It should be cold for a very long time because the dam, the thermostat on the backside of the hose, is keeping the warm water in the engine. Then all of a sudden, the thermostat will open up a little bit. You'll feel the hose get warm, and you'll look in the neck of the radiator, and you'll see movement of water, and you'll go, bingo, the thermostat just opened.
Okay.
That's $100 an hour right there, buddy.
Mm-hmm. All okay, right? Well, thank you very much. I appreciate
Caller
it.
Caller George.
Good looking. And George, you're up next. George, how are you today?
My wife loves your program, by the way.
You know, I get along with wives a lot better than I do the stud muffins out there. Because I got to tell you something. And if you're going to ask me a question about siding with your wife or you, I'm just going to tell you right now, I'm siding with her. That's all there is to it. It's the path of least resistance, buddy.
Okay, it's between my son and myself. We're having a tire issue.
Okay.
And I'm saying I've been told that you go by the car, what's on the car for the tire pressure. And my son says, no, you go by the tire pressure on the tire.
Okay. That is a very common discussion, and both of you are right. It depends on what you want. The Ford Explorer came out in 1990. It was the first sport utility vehicle. They wanted it to ride like a car, so they softened up the tires to 26 and 28. Uh-huh. So when they did that, it rode nice because you were driving around with four half-flat tires. The problem is, we all know it is those tires don't like to be going 80 miles an hour, 75 miles an hour, 65 miles an hour, because they blow up. So here's the left and the right. I tell everybody to go with the inflation on the tire. I tell everybody this is the reason why. There's only one negative. The negative is it might increase the ride harshness just a little bit. That's it. But let me give you the positives by going from the maximum on the tire. The tire runs cooler. That's very important. It's easier to get the vehicle rolling down the road with four fully inflated tires than it is with four half-inflated tires. So your fuel economy is going to get better. If you kiss a curb, the fully inflated tire won't let the tire get cut by the wheel. So your chances of curb hopping are a lot better that you won't blow a tire. Yes, you'll wear the center out of the tire, but who cares? And last but not least, if, God forbid, you get sideways on the road at 60 miles an hour, if you have four half-flat tires and all of a sudden your car goes into what we call a yaw, a side skid, if the tires are half-flat, you're going to roll that vehicle. You're going to roll that vehicle, you're going to roll that vehicle. If the tires are fully inflated, there's a good chance you're just going to slide down the roadway. So, five good reasons why you should air them up and one good reason why you shouldn't. There's the answer.
Thank you very much. So both of us were right.
And absolutely. And tell your son next time when he calls, give me his credit card number, okay?
Okay, thank you very right. much.
You're welcome. All right, Jeremy.
Caller Louie.
Louie. How are you, Louie? What can we do for you, buddy?
Sure. Listen, I've got an 03 Chevrolet minivan, and the headlights aren't too good, and my eyes aren't too good. So can I put a couple of auxiliary lights on the front of that car with a separate switch on the dash?
Yes, you can. Uh-huh. But there's a couple things I would do. First of all, if it's an 03, it may or may not have halogens in it.
No, it doesn't.
Then see if you can stick halogen bulbs in your car.
Well, I already put the better bulbs in, but that didn't do much.
1 minute.
Okay, did you have it? Have you had the headlights aimed?
No.
That's a good idea. And I'll tell you why. Last time I took the motorhome out with my wife, we actually don't usually drive at night, but yeah. She was drinking, so I was driving. And I noticed the headlights were really bad, so I pulled off the roadway and I pulled up to a building, and my right headlight was pointing towards Venus and my left headlight was pointed towards the ground on the left.
Uh-huh.
So I got a screwdriver out, and we had a heck of a fight, but I finally got them close. And I get this a lot, and it's really important for you to go have them checked. Now, another thing you can do, too, uh-huh. is you can pull up to your garage door at night and get back about 10 feet and look at the two headlights. They should be even. Now, get out and stand by the right rear corner, the passenger corner, and look down the side of the vehicle and do that on the driver's side. That yep. gives you left and right, and from the seat you get up and down. Then move them up a tad, move them down a tad, and see if that improves it.
Yeah, I did all that.
Okay.
They're okay.
Okay. Then yes, you can put driving lights on it, find somebody to do it. We got open lines available, 602-508-0960. Welcome back, everybody. My name is Mark Salem. I'll be your host until noontime today. Thank you very much for calling in. We've got open lines available, 602-508-0960. And this portion of Under the Hood is brought to you by my really good friends. And another good example of the very best shops in Phoenix is Brian and Thelma from Thompson's Auto Repair and Towing. I'm telling you, once you meet this couple, you'll understand what I'm talking about. They've been family-owned and operated since 1970 in Mesa. They can handle just about anything, and they're really good about telling you if they're not the best shop for your problem. That takes knowledge, that takes pride, and that shows you that they have your interest in front of their own. Thompson's understands your vehicle is a major investment, and they will care for your vehicle as if it were their own. So stop by and ask for Brian or Thelma at Thompson's Auto Repair and Towing. They're on Main Street in Mesa, just east of Stapley, south side of the road. So Stapley and Main, just east, south side of the road. Thompson's Auto Repair and Towing, a great place to go. All righty, we're going to go to Renee. Renee, good morning to you. How can I help you?
Good morning. Yeah. So I have a long-term project car that's been sitting for a while, 91 Dodge Stealth RT Twin Turbo.
Okay.
It was my instant mobile when I joined the Navy. And it's been sitting now for about 3 years. But I'm looking to get this thing started and kicking it off this summer. So looking to see what extent, how far do I need to go since it's been parked and hasn't started in 3 years.
Okay.
How far do I need to go with the engine? Do I need to get it overhauled? Or...
No. I have a good answer for you. This is exactly what I would do if I were in your shoes or if I was your brother helping you. Even if I didn't like you, I'd still do this. First thing you're going to do is you're just going to go out there and get the battery charged up or get a new battery in or get some jumper cables on it and crank the engine over. Okay. When we crank the engine over, I want you to crank it over for maybe 5 seconds and then take a break and then 5 seconds and take a break. I want to develop oil pressure. I want oil squirting on the cylinders and running out the camshaft and running out of the lifters before we get it running. Then you're going to get it running. When you get it running, I'd pop the hose that goes from the air filter to the intake and get some carb spray, get some ether, spray some stuff in there, have a fire extinguisher close by, wear some gloves, and get it running. Even if somebody has to stand there off to the side and go psst, 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 psst with ether. Mm-hmm. Just get it running. Once you get it running, then before you get it running, take the gas cap off and smell the inside of the tank. If it really smells rancid, then get yourself a siphoning hose. Go down and buy a 5-gallon bucket, a nice container, and pump the gas out the best you can. Put it in your lawnmowers and mix it with some of the other vehicles, okay? Because 3 or 4 gallons of old gas in a 20-gallon gas tank that's half full is not a problem, okay? So get rid of the gas, get some fresh gas in it. As soon as you get it running, then I want you to take it to a quick lube facility, change the oil in the filter, check all the tires, air them up, check fluids, hoses, belts, all that kind of stuff. Then I want you to put 30 days on it because here's what I promise you. I promise you that half of what starts out won't be there in 30 days. You'll have a hesitation on takeoff that will work its way out. You'll have extended cranking that will get better. You'll have a vibration that goes away. That's what you need to do. Get it on the road, but pretend it's a horse. And you don't want to get it on the road and ask it to run to Tucson. Mm-hmm. You're just going to get on the freeway, go 55, 65, 70. Don't abuse it. Don't throttle it up for any length of time. You can throttle it to the floor, but just not for any length of time.
Mm-hmm.
Let's exercise it. Let's let it build its muscles. Let's get it good and lubed. Then I would run it and get it good and warm, and about 1,000 miles, I'd do another oil change. I'd let the gas get as low as possible in the fuel tank, and then I'd fill it up with premium to give it a good bath, and just keep driving it. But I wouldn't fix anything I don't have to until the car's been on the road for 30 days.
Oh, that sounds good.
Yeah, don't do anything you don't have to. I mean, it can have an oil consumption problem at the very beginning that will go away. It can have poor fuel economy that will go away. There's just a lot of things that will come and go, and people get antsy because they take them in. And if a car comes into my shop and it's, you know, been on the road 3 days and they've got a list that's 10 miles long, I'm going to tell them, no, I want you to drive it some more. As long as you can drive it and it'll start and it's dependable, fine. But if it's not dependable, that's another thing. Okay?
Perfect. Thank you.
Thank you, Renee. Good luck to you. Mike, you're up next, buddy. How can I help you? Mike?
Yes, hi, Mark. Quick question. 2008 Kia Amante.
Okay.
It's got about 35,000 miles on it. It's my wife's car. And when she was started, I always noticed it kind of jerked when it would start. But I started driving it, and it does jerk when you turn the key over. It starts fine, but it jerks. It's like the engine jerks. And I thought it felt like maybe a bad motor mount or something. I took it to Kia, and they said the mechanic at first thought it was a motor mount. But then he checked the motor mounts. The motor mounts were okay. So he apparently hooked it up to the computer and said there was a board, which is next to a carburetor, which was bad, and they would have to replace that board, which was on a warranty. But they also said that the carburetor was dirty, and that's what caused the the board to go bad. So they charged me $100 to clean out the carburetor. And, you know, after they did all this, it was still the same. And then they told me there was no problem to begin with. So I'm just wondering, is there anything wrong with it, or is it just my imagination? Or
all right. Let me ask you some questions, because I'll do better after I ask this. When you're talking, you start it in the morning, and there's no jerking until you go to go into reverse or forward, right?
No, it jerks when you start it.
So describe that better to me. You start it up. Is the jerk occur the minute the motor catches, or a second after, 3 seconds after? When does the jerk occur?
The minute the motor catches.
Okay, and when it does, how do you feel it?
How do you feel it? You can just feel it in the car. You can feel it in the passenger seat. You can feel it in the driver's seat.
So
you can feel it in the steering wheel. It's like the engine is jerking.
Okay, and see, here's the problem, is that it's a communication problem. Jerking, to me, means it's that there's some kind of a motion forward or a motion backward or a big thump. But does the motor run smooth during this jerking?
Yeah, the motor runs fine. It just jerks for like the split second the car kicks in. That's the only time it jerks.
Okay.
And then it runs fine. It's fine.
Is this jerk described as a spike of RPM or a lowering of the RPM? Does that precede the jerk?
That doesn't seem to be it. It's just, you know, it's right when you turn the key over, as soon as it ignites, it kicks, it jerks, and the motor's running fine. I mean, it's not, there's not a high idle or a low idle. It's just, you know.
Okay, is I mean, if I said to you, make it jerk, see, the problem is that we don't understand what you're talking about. We don't understand the jerking part. Can you demonstrate it?
Yeah.
Okay, you were going to demonstrate it, you'd park it there at night, and you'd come back the next morning, and you'd get me in the car with you, and you'd be on the other side, and you'd start it up, and this jerk is literally something that you can feel on the butt of your seat and on the hands in the steering wheel, right?
That's correct.
Is it like that? The idle zooms up and stabilizes. Is it during that period of time?
No, it starts. I mean, it starts fine. There's not a problem. I don't see any problem with the engine revving up a little bit and then slowing down, or having a problem getting the RPM up to where it should be at idle. It's just that when as soon as it kicks in, it jerks.
Okay. See, that's, if you were my customer, I would say to you, you know what, Mike, we're not going to work on this until it becomes worse and easier to find, because I've never heard of it before. I can't put anything. I don't know if it's a misfire. You said it runs smooth. All the different what-ifs you've covered with answers already. I don't have anything. I've never heard of this before. Now, you stay there, because when we come back, I'm going to continue to talk about it. 602-508-0960. Welcome back, everybody. 34 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. You have no idea how much I appreciate all the calls. It's a lot of fun, and it moves fast, and they're great calls, and I really appreciate your effort in making our show really successful. So thank you very much. Let's go to the phones. Ted, thank you for holding. How can we help you? Hey, Ted.
09 Honda Accord four-cylinder.
Okay.
And interested in improving the mileage. I'm getting about 29 miles per gallon. And a couple of items that I've looked at is the K&N filters.
Okay.
And a GF performance chip. Are they something that, you know, would increase the mileage?
It's hard to tell, and I'll tell you why. The K&N air filter, from a financial point of view, it'll take you 100,000 miles before you make your first nickel. The K&N air filter is a fine piece of equipment for the right people. But to get better fuel economy and think that it's going to be just a K&N filter is not... You can buy 10 regular paper pleated air filters a year. 10! And you won't exceed the value of the K&N and the cleaning kit that goes with it. The K&N is really, it does flow more air, but the computer's going to control the fuel. So you can put a weed blower, a gasoline-powered blower in the front of that motor, and however air's coming in, the computer's going to match it with fuel. So it's not something that you can mess with. Now, the chip does do that, but all the chips out there are going to steal a little bit of fuel economy to give you more power. Because the whole idea between chips and programmers is to give you more power.
Okay.
Air up your tires to the most that it says on the side of the tire. Keep the windows rolled up. Take everything you don't ever use out of the trunk. What else can you... You can use your Accord. It doesn't use any oil, right?
No.
I'd use a 520 or a 530.
Uh-huh.
And that's about it. Just, and I'll tell you something else. For 20, if you want something good, for $29.95, I'll add a 29. I'll give you 5 more miles a gallon for $29.95. Are you in?
Okay.
I'm going to put a big horn underneath the driver's seat of your car, and every time you touch the brake, I'm going to activate that horn. I promise you, you'll get 5 miles a gallon. But I promise you, because you're going to learn how to anticipate traffic, you're going to learn how to coast a lot. You're going to learn how to throttle up lightly so you don't have to hit the brakes to slow down real fast. I'm going to change your driving habits. This is what I want you to do. Tape a hard-boiled egg to the throttle pedal. All right? Because a hard-boiled is easy to clean up compared to a raw egg. But it has everything to do with your brake and your throttle. If I took everyone's brakes away from them, if I just cut your line and said to you, Ted, go out there and drive. Ted, you'd get great gas mileage. You'd probably double that 29, and you'd probably end up near 50 or 60 because you got no brakes. I've cut them. You're not going to use them. So you're going to have to really plan ahead. And the last thing you're going to do is stomp on that throttle and get going 45 or 50 on a streak, knowing full well you can't slow down. You're going to draft people. You're going to coast a lot. You're going to downshift a lot. Just change your driving habits. Put a hot cup of coffee, a full hot cup of coffee between your legs and go out and drive. Try not to spill it. Those are the habits that we get better fuel economy, but airing up your tires and using a good grade oil and a 530 would do good for you as well. But the rest of that, Ted, save your money.
Okay.
All righty.
Thanks a lot for your opinion.
You're welcome. Thank you very much. Scott, you're up next, buddy. How can I help you?
Hey, Mark. Thanks for the time today. Really appreciate the show.
2 minutes.
My wife's got a 2006 Envoy 4.2 liter. It's got 115,000 miles on it and was running a little rough. So she said, so we changed the plugs, did the throttle body assembly.
Okay.
And that improved acceleration and smoothed it out a lot. But there's one thing that's still happening is when it's, not when it's in idle, but when as soon as you put it into drive, it does vibrate.
Okay.
In an idle state, not so much in the reverse. When you put it in reverse, but in drive, it's very noticeable.
Okay.
And so I was wondering if that is a transmission issue.
No, it's a motor mount issue. You've diagnosed it perfectly. You just saved yourself $80 to $100. Because think about this. Now, the Envoy motor, is that rear-wheel drive?
Yes.
Okay, think about the motors in front of you. When you put it into drive, you're sitting in the driver's seat. The driver's side of the engine's going to lift
one
up
because
the motor's going to want to rotate clockwise. So it's going to lean heavy on the right side mount, the passenger side mount. Do you understand that?
Yes, I do.
Okay, when you put it in reverse, what you're doing is you're spinning the motor counterclockwise. Now, when you spin the motor counterclockwise, this driver's side mount, it gets very little wear because most of the time you're in drive. So now you're leaning that motor on a brand new pillow on the driver's side of the engine. But when you go to drive, that motor mount is crushed and flat. And that's why you're getting the feeling that the engine's running rough, but you've identified it perfectly. If I had an applause, I would feed you applause. And now here's the hard part. Changing the mounts, no problem. Are you going to do one? Are you going to do two? Or are you going to do all three? That's going to be the hard part. So for sure you need the passenger side mount. Are you going to do the drivers? And are you going to do the transmission all at the same time, which levels everything out? You don't want to buy a right shoe and leave the left shoe all worn down. You certainly don't want to do that in cowboy boots. So the idea is you're going to do one, two, or three. That's your hard decision, but the rest of it's easy. You have a bad passenger side motor mount on your Envoy.
Okay.
All righty.
Excellent. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Scott. Thank you very much. Let's see where we're at. Oh, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to take care of Don and Bill and anybody else at 602-508-0960. Welcome back, everybody. My name's Mark Salem. It's 1144, and we're going to take some calls, but first I've got to take care of some business. A body shop. A body shop is the kind of place that you get to pick according to Arizona state laws. I think you should pick your own body shop. You want the body shop to be an advocate for you and not being tied at the hip with the insurance company. It's not the insurance companies are bad, but I think you are better served if the body shop becomes your advocate. Greg May at Phoenix Body Works will be your advocate if you have an insurance claim. Phoenix Body Works is hassle-free, insurance company friendly. They know how to work with insurance companies. Greg will make sure your car is put back together, one, the right way, two, on time, three, at an affordable price, and four, and most importantly, four, with good quality parts. It's important to repair your car to pre-accident condition. Otherwise, put me back the way you found me. I've been recommending Phoenix Body Works for lots of years and heard lots of nice things from very happy customers. So I'm proud to have them on my best car repair shop list that's at marksalem.com. Phoenix Body Works, they serve Anthem, New River, and the entire North Phoenix area. They're located at 19th Avenue, half block north of Deer Valley Road, and you can reach them Monday through Friday, 8 to 5, or Saturday, 9 to 2, or actually 9 to 12. That's Phoenix Body Works, 19th Avenue, half block north of Deer Valley Road. Alrighty, Don, you're up next, buddy. How can I help you?
Well, actually, you already did help me. I think you may owe you some money as a marriage counselor or something. You made me look like a hero with my wife, so I'm really happy. I called up a couple of weeks ago and had a problem with my Durango, and both of your suggestions fixed that thing right up, and she thinks I'm smart. I didn't tell her I talked to you, but...
You know what? Your secret is safe with me. You know why? I got to tell you a funny story. I said a couple of times ago, I said this, I'm going to live to be 100, and on my tombstone, it's going to say he never washed his hands after he went to the bathroom. Okay? Now, I think that's funny. I get home and my wife says, you don't need to worry about your tombstone because I'm going to have your biohazard arse cremated because you're a walking biohazard. And so I said, honey, it's just a joke. She says, I don't care. If you're going to admit to people that you don't wash your hands after you go to the bathroom, she says, I'm cremating you for the best of world kind. Honey, it's just a joke. But anyway, I'm not going to tell your wife.
All right.
All right.
Thank you very much for the help.
You're welcome, Don. Thank you very much for your kind words. It's nice to hear every once in a while I get lucky. Bill, you're up first, buddy. How are you?
Mark, I've got a 2001 F-150 with 150,000 miles on it, and I'm trying to decide whether I should replace the motor and tranny or put that money towards a new truck?
I can do both the motor and tranny for the sales tax on a new truck.
Well, Ford's telling me for a crate motor and tranny with all the labor and
Don't tell me the number. Is it a two-wheel drive or four-wheel drive?
Four-wheel drive.
Okay, F-150. I'm thinking the transmission's going to be in the vicinity of I'm going to say $2,500, give or take $300 or $400. I'm going to say that the engine and the the engine's going to be somewhere around... What motor you got on that?
5.4.
Okay. The engine's going to be somewhere around $5,000. In and out's going to be somewhere around $1,500. That's $6,500. $500 worth of miscellaneous. We're at $7,250, $300 in tax, $7,300. And the transmission, I'm thinking $10,000 or less.
Yeah, that's... Ford wants 12, okay. I figured. They said between 10 and 12.
Okay. All right. You know what? It really is the rest of the truck. You're going to do both of the... There's only three big bills on your truck. Engine, transmission, and air conditioning system. Those are the three big ones.
Right.
Nothing else comes close. Now, the drivetrain on yours, if you've changed oil in your front and rear differential and your transfer case on a regular basis, they're going to last a while.
I just had the differential was rebuilt because I lost the carrier bearing, so
okay.
That's done. Front end was rebuilt at $50,000.
Okay. So if you buy a new truck at $40,000 at 9%, you got $3,600 worth of sales tax, plus you're going to have another probably $800 worth of license plates. You're at $4,400. You've already paid half. Now, here's something I want you to think about. If you spend $10,000 and that truck will give you how many more years of service? Answer that question for me.
Oh, it'll probably give me another 10 years.
Okay, that's $1,000 a year. That's $88 a month. Is my math right?
Yeah.
So I'm going to say to you, you know what? I'm going to buy your truck from you. I'm going to lease it to you for $88 a month. It's going to go 10 years, and you're going to pay me $88 a month. Would you drive that truck for another 10 years for $88 a month?
Yeah.
Heck yes, you would. And even if the air conditioning went out, who cares? I got plenty of money to fix it. So look, I want to tell you that I've made two bad business decisions in my whole life. Number one, I own a self-service car wash. Oh, that was a big mistake. But the second thing is all the new cars I've bought and all the money I've lost. I regret that. I have a 2005 pickup truck, and it's got 100,000 miles on it, and I don't think I'll ever replace it. I think I'll put a new motor in it when it needs one. I'm just tired, and I see my young technicians buy vehicles. And they buy them for $5,000, they drive them for 2 years, and they sell them for $5,000.
Yeah, well, I'm 62 years old, and I can count the number of cars I've had on one hand.
Yeah.
I usually drive them until the wheels fall off, then I put the wheels back on and put another 100,000 on them.
Yeah, I think you should call around and compare warranties. I think you're going to hear rebuilt engines. Now, Ford doesn't have a factory that rebuilds their engines, and if they do, they don't build many of them because they can't do all of them. But Ford's going to be a good rebuilt. Jasper's going to be another good rebuilt. The transmission, you can get a Jasper transmission, or you can have that one rebuilt. But I did some rough numbers there because here's the four numbers you need for your engine. The engine cost, the in-and-out labor, the miscellaneous, and the tax. That covers everybody. The miscellaneous is oil, filters, spark plugs, hoses, belts, coolant, blah, blah,
right.
blah, 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 and $300, $400 in tax. So it's just real easy. Call around and say, give me four numbers. Engine, in and out, miscellaneous, and sales tax. That's what I want from everybody. And the transmission is easy. You just call around. Get on my website and call some of those transmission people and say to them, this is what I got. Give me transmission in and out rebuilt. So I vote you fix what you got. And but you know what? If you want a new truck, God bless you. Go get one.
No, I don't really. I love my truck, and I like I said, I've just about rebuilt everything. So
well,
the thing with Ford is they give me a 3-year unlimited mileage guarantee on everything. So none of the shops I've called can do that.
It's 3 years on both engine and transmission.
Right.
Okay. Well, if I buy a Ford motor and it comes with a 3-year, 36,000-mile warranty. I can still put it in, and you're still going to get that 3 years. You're not only going to get it through me, but you're going to get it through them.
Oh, okay.
Okay. And so you might have other people bid that. Let me give you a good example. Boy, you brought up something good. Now, pay attention to this, okay?
Okay.
A transmission bid at three different dealerships. One of them said $1,035, $1,242, and $1,100. So the difference is 1,035 to 1,242. It gets better than that. The transmission, the harness, the labor, final totals. Here's the quotes. 1,900 at one and 3,200 at the other. Wow. And I'm bidding apples for apples.
Wow.
1,900 to 3,287. Now, I'm bidding a diagnostic, I'm bidding a computer, I'm bidding a wiring harness one, a wiring harness two, and all the labor and out the door quote, $1,900 to $3,200 with $2,700 as the average. Now, I bid it through one independent. The independent came in at $2,266. He came in $500 underneath the average. That's not going to work every time. But I also want to tell you something else. The PCM, okay, the computer. The computer has a value, a truly honest to goodness value, is $1,035, but yet I had estimates from $1,035, $1,035 all the way up to $1,100. Are you with me?
Yes.
Here, the wire harness was $133. That's the suggested retail price. I had one that was $133, I had one at $200, and I had one at $240. $240 is $100 higher than retail on that wire harness. On the second wire harness, the wire harness itself is $236. One hit $236. One said $331, and one said $240. Ask yourself, we're tossing list price out the window. Everybody's just going based on what they want to make on their parts. That bodes well for you.
So I guess I got to do more research.
I think you should. I think you should. All right. Good luck to you, buddy.
Thank you. Bye.
You betcha. And Blaine, you're up next. Blaine, how can I help you?
Yes, Mark. Happy 39th. I enjoyed the story.
Well, thank you very much. Thank you.
I'm looking at 59 in June.
Good for you. Good for you. God bless you.
I have a 1999 GMC Safari van. I had the steering gearbox replaced, and now whenever I make a turn, it whistles at me, kind of air sound. Whenever I come back to center, it stops.
Wow. Is it coming from the power steering in the gearbox?
I just had it replaced, yeah. Never had that noise before.
Then I want you to go back to the shop, even if it's mine, I don't care. You go back and you say, you gave me something I didn't have before. And would you look at it? Because sometimes we create problems that we don't even know we created. And I think the noise is coming from the steering box. And it could be because maybe they put the wrong box on it, or maybe they didn't put the right line on it, or there's some kind of an orifice tube that's supposed to meter the flow of refrigerant or of power steering fluid, and they didn't reinstall that. There's all kinds of possibilities. I can tell you that that's not something that I would say, you know, go get done tomorrow, first thing. I would say that that's probably something that will never cost you money, but it's worth taking back and saying to them, you gave me something I didn't have. Would you take a look at it, please?
Okay.
That's
the disturbing part about it, my daughter also has a van like mine,
mm-hmm.
and she had the same problem with her gearbox. They took it back and replaced it again, and she still got that little, it just sounds like air, coming through.
Well, it's probably because, how many miles are on the Safari vans?
101.
Okay, been around the world 4 times. Yeah. Did they replace the pump along with the steering box or just the box?
Just the box.
Okay, well, as the box wears out, the fluid's going to flow through it a lot faster. So, and it's a power steering box. So when you put a new box on an old pump, the pump still generates a lot of pressure, but it's restricted because the orifices in the old steering box are a lot smaller. So there's likely, and you know, I'd be interested, I'd pop the hood off that thing and have somebody sit on the fender and go driving around the parking lot and turn it to the right, and I'd have him touch the high pressure hose, and if that noise is coming from there, I'm going to say to you, no harm, no foul.
Okay. They also had to replace the high pressure line.
Okay. And hopefully they just did the line at the back of the pump, and that they didn't take anything off the back of the pump that may have metered that.
2 minutes.
So, well, good luck to you, Blaine. Thank you very much
okay.
for calling, buddy. All righty. And Bob, you're last. We lost Bob. All right. Well, that's okay. I got to tell you about somebody special to me, and that is Kurtz Auto Body. Kurtz is up there at I-17 and Bell. He's a good guy. He's honest. And folks, here's the deal. These people I've identified, I've been in this business for 30 more years. I started this in 1988, the best car repair shop list, and it stood the test of time, even to the point where I say, hey, you go to Kurtz and you have a problem. Kurtz is going to go to Better Business Bureau arbitration. And if they tell Kurtz to give you a refund or fix something and he doesn't, I will up to $5,000. But that never happened. We've never even been to arbitration because these guys play by the rules. And there's a lot that don't. Kurt's Auto Repair, again, I-17 and Bell, just east on the north side of the road. He can do domestic, imports, gas, diesel. He offers all kinds of services at affordable prices, and he'll get you back on the road quick. So Kurt's Auto Repair is a great place if you don't have one. Those of you that are in the area of a shop and you don't have one, please visit my shop, and if you have a comment, you're welcome to give it to me, because I'll pass those on, and maybe with your name and maybe without. Just depends on what you want me to do. But the idea is the number one question that I've had since 1988 in the Valley is, how do I find a good shop, or who's a good shop? Or they'll say, can I come to yours? And I'm going to say, where are you at? And they say, North Scottsdale. And I say, you're going to pass 10 good shops on your way to me. Why don't you let me guide you? You see, that's the reason I don't mention the name of my shop, because it's important for you to know that I'm here for you. I'm not here for just to pad my own shop. I'm not here to stump my chest. I'm here for you. Mark at MarkSalem.com if you get lonesome. Mark at MarkSalem.com. God bless you. Wear your seatbelt. See you next Saturday.